Welcome, everybody, to the Let's Get Critical podcast. Oh,
yay,
we're in the thick of it now, huh? Our group is growing here. Mm-hmm. We're a few episodes in. We're getting nice and cozy and comfortable, you know, posing for the camera, getting loose.
Welcoming Bella Bayer here with us today.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
Yeah. Welcome, Bella. For everybody who isn't familiar with the band, Bella is our tech trigger operator. I don't know if that's the official...
Trigger tech, yes.
Trigger tech,
that's
okay.
Right, yeah.
That's a cool name.
Bang, bang, right?
Yeah.
That's fancy. Right. I just say I push the buttons. I'll take trigger tech.
Yeah, you plug shit in and just, you know, push the buttons.
Yeah.
And of course, with us as always is our good pal...
you can see, whatever, yeah.
Ruben Beltran.
There you go. Yeah.
Guitarist, that's co-founder, extraordinaire. You really are kind of like Inspector Gadget. You do just about everything, man. So the band thanks you.
That's cool, man. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then joined with us again
for the
third time or fourth, I've lost count. The mysterious.
Yeah.
The enigmatic Zeke Zero.
Well, check about now. That ain't my line. I'm sorry. Hello, I'm Zeke Zero.
You already trademarked that, dude.
I know.
We are jumping right into a very, very cool album today. I have not listened to this artist before at all. I only heard her Sublime cover that she did a few years ago.
Summertime, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But this was a Ruben pick, so take it away, Ruben.
All right, so for me... this came out in a time when I was starting out in my culinary career, and I was listening to whispers everywhere about this, right? Now, I heard a lot of negative feedback about this record, but then I think the positive feedback overwhelmed that, and the people who were speaking praises to Lana Del Rey and this record, Born to Die, it was people that I trusted, people that liked the similar music to me, people that I knew I would talk Deftones with or talk... Korn or whatever new, you know, things that I was into. So I was like, okay, I think I'm going to believe them, you know? And I think I still took a while to listen to it. I remember being in LA and my nieces, including you, were little. Mm-hmm. And I think y'all were rocking it already too back then. So I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to check it out, you know, like on my own. And I fell in love with this album. It has like a lot of hip hop sensibilities. She has so much like familiarity, I think, with her own voice, Lana, that she's like a chameleon. She could sound a million different ways on the same record, you know? And I think it just goes to show she's really studied her own voice. You know, she knows exactly what she wanted to do. She worked with good people. I read that she actually was, and you could probably follow up on this a little, Bella. She went under a couple different names before she became Lana Del Rey. She was Lizzie Grant, and she was Jump Rope. What is it? The Jump Rope Queen or something like that?
It was something like that. I remember we were looking at it in the car. We were just you know, discussing all her different...
Names in her career. And I guess she had put out a record as Lizzie Grant, or, you know, had her dad help pay for that. But then she ended up scrapping it when she came up with the persona of Lana Del Rey. And I'm, you know what? I'm glad she did. I don't know what the other songs sound like, but to me, I think this is a very polished product.
Yeah.
It was Sparkle Jump Rope Queen.
Yeah. We would be doing a podcast about Sparkle Jump whatever.
Jump Rope Queen.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. I know that game.
Yeah.
You know?
Double Dutch.
None of those old songs ever leaked?
I don't know, man. I, you know, for me, it's really this album that's like my jam, you know? Mm-hmm. I listened to fucking Norman Rockwell and... what was the other one? Paradise. Paradise was okay because it's kind of a mix of this and some other songs. Norman Rockwell didn't hit it with me. The new one's cool, but it's like hella mature. Like my daughter loves Born to Die. I tried showing her the new one and she's like, I'm gonna fall asleep like in the car because it's chill. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's really chill. I feel like it doesn't have the hip hop sensibilities that Born to Die has. And to me, that's what makes it rock, you know?
Yeah. Well, I got some fun factoids.
Yeah.
As I tend to have, it looks like she wrote this when she was like 26 years old, which is incredible. Right?
Yeah, right, right.
This was her second album on a major label, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has a what I found very interesting about it, it has like a 1950s, 1960s Americana kind of feel to it, but kind of skewered in this weird like post housing crisis millennial type environment, right? And I'll touch on that in a little bit.
No, yeah, I think that nails it on the head. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, as of 2024, it has sold 18 million copies, so it's a giant, man. Yeah. I honestly, when I listened to this, I was like,
because I've been talking about it for a long time, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, so it came out in 2012, and me being the resident millennial, deep or at least deep millennial, what's interesting about it is so she's around the same age as me, but there was this weird pocket after the housing crisis and after Occupy Wall Street and kind of before what the 2010s was really known for, which was civil movements, right? Where millennials were kind of entering college, entering the workforce, and there was this odd kind of like party culture, but like kind of like in a hopeless way, sort of like the revolution's over, we don't really have anything left, let's just like get real fucked up,
yeah,
right. And I mean, even, and we'll touch on this later, but even just first track in, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what she's talking about here. You know, it's just this amazing. I can understand why this album was such a big deal and why it spoke to so many people.
As not a millennial, I remember when it came out, the song that really blew up when I was in middle school was Summertime Sadness. And you know, the way that you say it was after like this crisis and it was in like a hopeless way, we were like, yeah, we got that summertime. We were like rocking out to it, completely oblivious to like any underlying meaning. So it's so funny that you say that, because I just remember like looking back, I'm like, man, we were singing about like summertime sadness. It's like, you know, kind of depressing.
Kind of bleak.
yeah. I was like, oh shit.
No.
This album for me, when it came out, not that she sounds like this artist, but it reminded me of Odelé by Beck, only because it was different when it came out during that time, and it was a mixture of a lot of things that were familiar, but with a youthful look and take on it. I remember when this came out, our generation, for me and Ruben, they didn't really gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
I remember she did a SNL appearance, right?
Yeah.
And that, I mean, in retrospect, looking back on it now, I watch it. It's like, it's not even that bad.
She got panned, though. Yeah. It was before the album came out.
It was terrible.
They said it was doomed, right?
Yeah. It was terrible how the media really treated her. But she was saved by the younger generation. They got into it, and they pushed her forward. And now, if you ask people, I mean, she's headlining all these tours. She's going to be at Coachella now. She's huge. So
superstar.
Yeah, you would have never thought. She came from the beginnings of where like people were, they're really dissing her. They were really ragging on her, you know. And this album's really good. I didn't listen to it when it first came out either. I was like, oh man, I don't know. I don't know how to take this. But you know, later on, I think in just like good music, it'll find you.
Yeah, so, definitely. That's exactly how I feel about this album.
And that's the point of this podcast. That's finding right. Good new music.
This is where you get the rainbow to go across the screen. The more you know. Yeah.
So without further ado, now that we're in the format, we're pretty comfortable now, and we're just gonna go right in. Yeah. We're just gonna go right into our bottom threes. Damn. Now, Ruben,
I'll let Bella start with the bottom three.
Okay.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Damn,
yeah.
Bella.
You
got me. A list right there.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta say that this is like the only Lana album that I can tolerate. I'm not a huge Lana fan, but I would say my bottom three, number three is Million Dollar Man. It just doesn't hit for me. I'm sorry.
Same. Yeah.
Number two, This Is What Makes Us Girls. And number one, Off to the Races. I don't know if you guys have any agreements or disagreements.
Your little cousin would cuss you out right now
for Off to the Races.
Off to the Races,
huh?
She knows that song. Yeah,
you know, it's not because it's like the song itself. It's more so because I had to pick a bottom, and I was like, the other ones.
I get you.
The other ones are like good, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I had to pick which one was my least favorite, it would be Off to the Races. Out of
Off to the Races is not on my bottom three, but I do agree with you about it wasn't on my top three either.
Right.
And I felt like the song starts off with a lot of energy, mm-hmm. and then it kind of just spins its wheels after a while. And you're sitting there thinking, you know, I'm good for this to end, right. but then it just keeps going.
And you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll go into my bottom three. For me, it was Million Dollar Man. I feel it was kind of like, it sounded a little too submissive for me. Like, I don't like that yeah. message in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's clever with like the wordsmith stuff, mm-hmm. but I don't really like the message that comes across, and the melody kind of loses itself. And, you know, I just keep thinking of the wrestler, Ted DiBiase, yeah. the million dollar man. You know? Yeah. You know, I just keep thinking of him, you know? So, like, I don't know. I just can't. It just didn't click with me. The next one was Carmen. Carmen was hella bleak. Like, you know what? It's perfect on this album. I don't hate this song, but it's hella bleak. Like, mm-hmm. for real. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it paints a real descriptive story of someone just spiraling out and just burning out. You know, from partying too much and stuff like that. And I don't know, it's cool. It's a little, the melody's a little too gloomy for me too. And I love gloomy shit. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why it ended up on my bottom three. And for my third one is, what's it called? The last song, basically. It was on your bottom three too.
This is what makes us
gross. This is what makes, yeah. I think it's cool, but it's like, and I've read that's like very like autobiographical mm-hmm. of like what really happened or whatever, because she was having issues with like alcoholism and her parents got pissed and like shipped her off. But again, like, I don't know, it just doesn't click with me too much. Mm-hmm. I feel like something else could have closed the record and it would have been a little stronger, you right. know, to finish it up.
I agree with that, only because, you know, by the time you get to the end of the record, it is kind of the same sort of messages getting to an extent pummeled into you as a listener.
Right.
And you're really looking for something that brings a little bit of resolve or maybe a little change or a twist, like some either tonally or lyrically, just something that kind of closes it out. And I don't feel like the song necessarily does that with the album.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. True. For me, yeah, dude, it was Off to the Races, Million Dollar Man, and This is What Makes Us Girls. For some reason, yeah, like
you copying me?
No,
this
for
is
real.
Brown Chicken, Brown Cow all over again, man.
This is weird.
As he's like, you know, changing up the same in a different order. You know, Mike's gonna notice.
I was gonna bring my beanie too.
We're copying each other's homework. We know we butted into the homework.
No, but seriously, it's something about those songs. They're not bad songs. It's just. They weren't the shining gems of the album, and there's so many too.
And it's such a good album.
It is a great album, yeah. As a bonus, I picked up Born to Die Remix as my bottom fourth right there, man. I don't think it was necessary. I don't know if you guys heard that.
I heard it. I don't think it does anything.
Yeah. I don't even think it needed a remix, to be honest. So
I think the one I bought on Apple has that. The version I bought on Apple. Because mm-hmm. it's not, I listened to it on Spotify, and it doesn't have that. It has I think the Summertime Sadness or something. I forget what it has.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't really care for it. Emra would come on the rotation and I'm like, skip.
Yeah.
But it's like very rare that a remix is like actually good.
Well, you know what? The Summertime Sadness remix is what really blew her up, you know? The faster mm-hmm. version, not the slow one. I heard the faster one before I heard the slow one.
Yeah.
My mom loved the faster one. It's crazy.
I remember hearing the faster one and then hearing the slower one being like, what the hell is this? Happened? I thought that one was the remix.
Yeah,
you
I did
know?
Too. I did
like,
too. Yeah.
What is this, like the acoustic version?
Yeah. But it grew on me. The slower one grew on me.
Cool. All right. Well, yes. I'm so excited because I'm not going to spoil it. My bottom three, number one, Summertime Sadness.
Oh, wow.
Now, you got to keep in mind, this is the first time I've heard any Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm. And it's funny because this is like...
We can all say boo.
What's funny is this is the big song off the album, right? But for me, in the context of the album, it felt a little bit like filler. It felt a little less nuanced than some of the other standout tracks. And it gets a little bit repetitive. But it's crazy because it has over a billion views.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, but what I mean is, like, the album is so heavy with, like, how, like, debaucherative and degenerative and, like, you know, again, just this motif of hopelessness and like, it was striking a chord with me throughout most of the tracks.
Yeah.
But then it got to this song and I'm like, wait, where did that go? Where did that anger go?
Someone want a piss break or something? Or, hey.
Next one being Diet Mountain Dew.
That's your jam.
I love that song.
Those are fighting words.
Yeah. It starts off with a lot of fun energy, but it kind of loses steam after a while. Sort of like Off to the Races.
Yeah.
I felt like those two songs were sort of in the same, they're same in the same pocket where it's like, oh, we're jumping into something fun, and then it just lasts like a little too long. And I'm sitting there waiting for the song to be over.
Yeah.
And then the third one is Dark Paradise.
I feel you on that one. It didn't make my bottom three, but...
The song almost felt like she... Like even Lana, and this is pure fiction. I don't know Lana Del Rey. I'm in no position to criticize Lana Del Rey, but I felt for whatever reason, I felt like when I was listening to this song that she was kind of doing it obligatorily. Like she was like, well, we need another track, so let's throw this in here too.
It could be, right? When we're writing tons of music or whatever, you tend to sometimes, you got to give yourself a break, right?
Right. So those are my bottom three. I cannot wait to get my top three because we're going to be in so many arguments.
Oh man.
With that said, let's go into the top three.
All right. Go for it.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Off to the races, right?
Well, I'm not going to start with Diet Mountain Dew because I would say that Video Games is one of my top ones. That one's just so fun to listen to.
It is.
It's fucking like amazing. No wonder she got signed on that. You know?
Right. Video Games is definitely, it's like one of my favorite songs.
In the world, right?
It's just so good. It's just like, that was after I heard Summertime Sadness, which I honestly agree, it's a little redundant. And I feel like it was more of like a radio song than anything else.
Yeah.
But Video Games really is what got me to listen to the rest of the album. Because I was like, oh, this is cool. And I think the first time I heard it, I was like, I used to share a room with my sister. And she would play this album. And I would just like, I used to hate her music. But she played this. And I was like, who is this? And she was like, Lana Del Rey. And then I like listened to it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I listened to the rest of the album, which is why... Diet Mountain Dew is next. It's just another classic. I don't know. It's just what made the album the album.
I think the production is fucking killer on it.
The piano. It's so good. The strings. It's just like everything the beat. Is just amazing. And then my third is a tie between Dark Paradise and National Anthem. National Anthem used to be like one of my like most annoying. Like, I did not like that song. But it's just, like, so fun. It's, like...
It's so goddamn catchy.
It is. Yeah. It's, like, the anthem to success. And then you just, like... You know, it's, like, a song that you listen to while, like, getting ready. Or, like, you know, something that it's just, like, playing in the background. And it, like, keeps you in, like, a boppity
vibes mood. I'd catch myself be, like, humming along. And then I would change to, like... Tell me I'm your frantic romantic.
Exactly. And then Dark Paradise. I don't know. I like a little... A little, you know, bummer song. Why not? It's a cool song.
And like BG boarding homeboy like every night, you know? Come back, you know? Yeah.
I respect those choices. And I will just say before we go forward, there's not a bad song on this album, and that's why it's hard to pick a bottom three.
It is. No, I think totally. I agree. Go for it, dude.
Let's see, man. I have no bottom three. Oh, no, I have no top three because they're all my favorite. No. The opening track, Born to Die, was really good. I think that was a great opener and a great great introduction to the
album.
Lana Del Rey in general, you know. Let's see, Blue Jeans was awesome. Mm-hmm. I love the lyrics. It's a sultry single. The chorus is amazing, man.
You ever see the video?
Of course. No, I haven't.
It's like an alligator. It's like, holy shit. What yeah. The? She's in the pool and there's like an alligator swimming by and the whole video.
I've not seen that.
It's a trip.
I do gotta check that out.
I do like the way she sings it, how she kind of like.
Yeah,
has like
a deeper... Some say she's like a chameleon, man. She keeps changing her voice, you know?
Yeah.
See, I wonder how she sounded like before. That's I wonder if this, if her old self carried on through, huh? But this is probably just a persona. Radio, man, it gave me Chris Isaac vibes. It had like the sense of a sexual energy too. That's very like magnetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Radio is probably one of my, one of, it's my favorite song on the album, to be honest. Yeah.
I think that one was like fourth on my list, fourth or fifth, because that one's a good one too.
That's very good. Yeah.
I love it. But overall, this album, like I said, this album's very, very well made. The production's really good. You know, it's funny that they listed like under trip hop, but it has a lot of hip hop elements. So I wonder why they didn't throw that, you know, phrasing out there. I heard other people in conversation talk about it as being hip hop influence, but it's labeled as electro alternative or trip hop. But it,
it's got a lot of Americana too, though, like you were saying, you know, I hear that.
It's got like a very versatile sound to
It's got classical, almost like a neoclassical really tune. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that's what really won me over is the way everything was meshed so tastefully.
Pulling from a lot of places,
Yeah, totally. I remember showing a friend of mine that's like predominantly into hip hop. You know, I would just put stuff on while we're working, and he was like, "Who is this?" You know, and I was like, "Lana Del Rey." He's all, "Why do all my friends tell me this sucks?" It's like, man, you know, they're a bunch of liars. Like, this is great, you know? He's like, "Shit, I got to go give this a listen to," you know? Because it checks off a lot of those boxes. It has a lot of those sensibilities, you know?
It does. It makes you feel like a 1940s Hollywood starlet as well.
Yeah.
You listen to it. You're cruising down the boulevard.
In a convertible, right? With a scarf and all that shit.
Oh, yeah. I love the imagery.
I love the imagery. Yeah. Me too. Or like traveling from a small town to one of the big cities, you know? That's what vibe I get.
That's like the overall aesthetic too. Yeah. Like if you see like on her social media and stuff, she does give off that aesthetic, like a very like... Classic, 1940s type vibe.
Right, totally. Let me get into my top three. For me, Radio. Radio's at the top of the list. I think it's, you know, it's cool. I was listening to it with my wife, and she's like, "This is such a good song." And then she hears the F-bomb. She's like, "Why'd she have to do that?" You know? And then I was like, "I think I like it more now," you know, just because it's like, it's just in there subtly. My daughter loves that song too, and I don't know, it's just production's great on it. It's just, it's so catchy, and it's just kind of the way it winds around. It's totally meant to be on the radio, you know. I don't know if it ever was. Mm-mm. I don't think so, but I feel like it should have been, you know.
Camila was like, "I like the F-bomb."
I know. Yeah.
She's like, "Daddy, can I say that
can
word?
Can I say that word just when I'm singing with this?" Yeah.
Has she noticed the F-bomb?
I don't. You know what? I know she kind of just mumbles when that comes up. I'm sure when she's by herself, she probably sings it. I don't know. You know. Video games. Video games is amazing. It just, you know, it was almost like one of those, like, I didn't know they made music like that anymore, you know? Like, I feel like it was, like, big production. And it's, I mean, it was, but I mean, when I say big production, I mean, like, cinematic big production. When they used to have bands play with stuff and, like, motion pictures way, way back when, you know? Like, it just has this big, humongous, like, feel to it, you know? Like, something, like a big event's happening or something. I remember, again, you know, my daughter, she loves this record, so that's why I picked it. She was in the car with you know, the whole family. We were driving somewhere, and I was listening to this, and she was like, "Hey, this is the kind of music I want to write when I grow up. I want to write songs just like this, you know?"
No, cool.
And I was just like, this is great. You know, I could see why it would appeal to a kid or to me and to anybody, really. You know, it's just, it's a beautiful song.
Like, this is music.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And my last pick is the title track, Born to Die. I think it's like the perfect introduction to the record. It just brings you in. And like for me, every time the album, because I bought it on CD afterwards, when it comes around, it's just perfect, you know? It's like that nice loop around.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, every time I'm catching rides with you, dude, you're always...
It's always on. It's on the radio. Quietly, we're all talking, you hear it and shit, yeah.
Every once in a while, I start singing along. I know. I've had that too, where you'll be like dropping me off at home or something, and it'll be on in the background, and we'll be having a conversation. Yeah.
Mike's on. No.
All right. Oh, man, I am so excited. Okay, so at number three is Born to Die.
Yeah.
Because open it. It's the lead-in track to the album. Mm-hmm. And right away, I'm like, oh, I know what this album's going to be about. I get it. I get you, Lana Del Rey. Like, I was there, too. Yes, very tragic, very bold. You know, weaving in pop sensibilities for subject material that's very honest and and not pandering. So right off the bat, like, awesome. The next one is National Anthem. I think National Anthem was like the perfect example of like her pulling in all these different influences, putting them into a song and having that song just be like mechanically working perfectly. And there was this weird, like, Anthony Kiedis type style that she was doing during the chorus. I'm like, oh, that's like an interesting choice. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then number one track, my favorite track, $1 Million Man.
Saw that coming.
And here's the thing. I wasn't paying attention to the lyrics, so I don't know what the lyrics are about. And it sounds like they're pretty awful, but, the soundscape of that and like how it was like showcasing her voice and what she can do combined with the orchestration, combined with the electronic elements, combined with you know, it was a jazz influenced ballad.
Very, yeah.
And it really like it starts off really intimate and then it just lifts you up and then it just builds into this huge crescendo of a song. And I'm like, man, I want to sing that. You know what I mean? Like I was geeking out about like just the dynamic of that song and it just starts so small and it just kind of expands out and just, yeah, it had me by the heartstrings. So $1 Million Man, I'm not apologizing. Fuck it.
You know, what's funny is that was the original intention for the song Glow on the Victoria Trap, was to kind of blossom like that. But I mean, obviously that didn't happen, you know, just as we produced that, it just became like, just like a, later we were like, okay, I guess it's the James Bond song, which I don't even know why we said that, but we did, you know, Joseph and I.
Well, and speaking of which, Million Dollar Man kind of played like a James Bond song.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
it's true.
All right. So we avoided any arguments, and that's great. Thank you for being so understanding.
That's crazy, the point, man. Of trying to get these perspectives, to get all these perspectives.
No. Right? Jumping on in real quick is what kind of influence do you think she has on artists now?
Oh.
Because I see a little, and I don't want to go against, because I know there's Swifties out there, right?
You know what's funny?
We don't want no retaliation, because I heard they're pretty, yeah.
You know what's funny, though, about that? And go on, finish your thought.
Well, I just want to say, I do see the influence that the stuff that Taylor Swift is coming out now kind of resembles like stuff off of this album.
Could be in the ethos of the same.
Some of like the tragic storytelling, which is not bad. You know, it's good elements to take from. So I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on.
Well, you know, I'll give you Miriam's perspective on this. She was doing karaoke with Camila, and they did a Taylor Swift song, right?
Mm.
And, you know, she's reading the lyrics. She's like, God, these lyrics are pretty awful. You know, she's like, while she's singing, she's like, this is really bad, you know? And then we did a Lana song, and she's like, oh my God, this is way better. Like, lyrically, this is just so much better. Mm. It's just a little more sophisticated, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, that's that perspective, you know?
I also think that if you're to go way back to the aughts, especially towards the end, right? Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, the aughts means the 2000s.
I like the way it sounds. That's like the aughts.
The aughts.
Yeah.
Or as the British say, the noughties.
The noughties.
Especially for female singers, there was much less of a platform for them, to be honest. Mm. And for them to like really like blossom with like, again, with honesty, with like, hey, this is life. It's tough. Here's my problems. Listen to me. But like, just, and again, this is my first time listening to this album, but I can tell that it had a ripple effect that led into the rest of the 2010s, which was like a really great time for that kind of music. But what do I know?
I think that Taylor's career has really, she's kind of changed her sound based off of her fans and really like focused on a specific audience. And I think as someone who grew up with Taylor Swift and like the longevity of her career, which is incredible.
Yeah.
She's really started to cater towards her fans. And now that they're growing up, she's kind of, you know, finding the sound that they kind of like, which is, you know, Lana Del Rey and like other influences like that. So she's trying to, you know, mesh into that sound because of the audience and because, you know, Lana was so huge with like my generation. And that's also the generation that grew up with Taylor Swift. I think that a lot of artists who are trying to, you know, have longevity like Beyonce and Taylor Swift, they like are trying to find the sound that best caters to the people that
the demographic, right? Yeah.
So I think, you know, there is that influence, but it's like everybody's, you know, kind of influencing everybody else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, we're going to go into the very cynical part of our podcast. We're going to read our user review, and usually these swing negative, and we're going to see if we agree with the review. And we never do, but let's see. Okay, so this is a user review from Amazon. 1 out of 5.
Oh, man.
I was most amazingly disappointed and annoyed to have spent 1 cent on this worthless excuse of a music CD.
Hey, everybody. This is Mr. Kerosene. You know, this review that we're about to read on the podcast got a little bit dicey, talked about some stuff that were particularly mean towards the artist. So I think we're not going to include the whole thing, mainly because we're going to get in trouble and also because I feel bad. I'm sure if you look for it online, you could probably find it.
It was definitely a boomer who wrote that.
I think so, too.
It has to be. Man. Venomous splooge is crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not. I mean, whatever, right? Like, everybody's got their own taste, but that's just, I think that's just kind of being spiteful, just to be spiteful, honestly.
Well, that review is pretty venomous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the venomous splooge.
Right. And I can understand where someone who doesn't have the same life experience as some of the stuff that this artist was going through and wrote about. Right. I can understand where it's easy for them to like cast their stone and whatever, right? But like, let's be honest, like, okay, if you listen to music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, like, there's so much about like, there are tons of dark themes to draw from. It's not a new thing.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
That's always been, you know, pain has always been very, very, you know, has been very successful in writing, in art, in general.
Yeah.
Forever, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, you know?
It's probably written by a Nickelback fan, to be honest.
He hits sand and it's like, never, you know, what is it? Blind man? I don't know.
Look at this photograph.
Yeah.
I don't know, something like that.
Some shit, I don't know, yeah.
Sorry, do you like Nickelback? Okay.
I hope
not.
It's okay.
It's okay.
I have a coworker that likes Nickelback, surprisingly.
Hopefully he's not watching this.
This is not a safe space for Nickelback fans.
No.
Yeah. Sorry.
Anyways, that does it for... what am I saying? Born to Die, that was released on January 27, 2012. That was by Lana Del Rey. Fantastic album. Ruben, thanks for recommending this to us.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely a great entry point for me to listen to more of her music. For anybody who didn't catch us in the beginning of this episode, we are Frantic Romantic. We are a band. We make music. We love music. We love talking about music. We love showing music to each other. And hence making this podcast, Let's Get Critical. You can find more information about Frantic Romantic on franticromanticmusic.com. We're always updating our socials and that website with shows, with new music, with music videos, and a bunch of other stuff, including this podcast. We're also featured on the Let Me Listen Podcast Network, which is a much larger podcast network. And there's a lot of great stuff on there, different kinds of podcasts, including movie reviews and such. And you can find that on Spotify, Deezer, probably.
Probably Deezer,
All those streaming platforms. So thanks again to the Let Me Listen Podcast for having us on. And we will see you next time on the Let's Get Critical podcast. Thank you.
Let's Get Critical is a part of the Let Me Listen podcast network. You may find all Let Me Listen podcasts on such websites as Spotify,
Deezer, SoundCloud, and other streaming networks. You may find more information about the band Frantic Romantic by visiting franticromanticmusic.com, as well as our social media platforms. We're always posting information about concerts, new music, and more. So please, visit us, reach out to us. Let us know if there's any albums you'd love for us to review. Until next time, this has been Let's Get Critical.